Thanks, Adam. It's a download here, truncated version. Next 2 hours and 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. It's Friday night. Whisked in like a volunteer firefighter. When I was growing up, when I wasn't growing up in the, I guess, the 70s and 80s in Wonder Lake, Illinois, it was all a volunteer fire department. So when the siren would go off, all the volunteers would put the light in their car, and we would rush as kids to watch the guys get in their trucks and other places and speed to the fire. It usually meant nothing, but that was the idea that they were going. And I feel a little bit like that when a White Sox game ends early.
Yeah, I was at home, and I saw Chris Sale, you know, mow him down pretty quickly in that first inning, first couple of innings. I'm like, yeah, this thing has a feel of a Mark Burley 2 hour.
That's where he learned.
Yeah,
Sale learned from Burley. Yeah.
So I was like, oh man,
he knows how to throw. He knows how to. That's what Burley taught him in the clubhouse. He said, "This is a great city, Boston. It's Friday night. Let's go ahead and what you want to do is work as fast as possible so we can get to the steakhouse before it closes." That's how it works. And Sale took that to heart.
Yeah.
When he's in Chicago, I mean, you think about how quick. He's like, I can get home. I can just in time for SportsCenter. If I dilly-dally out there with a bunch of touching jersey, playing with the rosin bag, you know, messing around with my feet, no to the catcher,
yeah.
No timeout, let me get back, let me stretch, touch a jersey, play with the rosin bag, play with my feet, like the superstitions of baseball routines. No, Sale's like, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, get it done.
Yeah, he learned it from Burley. He learned it from watching you.
And we were here this afternoon working, doing some stuff, and then you did a thing. I went home,
and my son had a play tonight, so I was in a position where I was entertained while the first part of this game went fast. But what we saw was essentially it's after school. It's an after school program. You know, like you have after school, so school ends at 3:30 or something like that, and the idea is that for the next, I guess, what do you say, like, you know, 3 hours or so, that the kids will be in after school. Sometimes they have activities, things like that. Well, they have a theater part of that. And the theater part of it, which is fun, is they put together a play. And tonight was the play. In the last couple of years, I've talked about it. It's so cute to watch the kids do it. And it's so rough around the edges, is the best way to put it. It's like... kids not only not really getting their lines, but at the same time not having the microphone in the right place and not in the right place on the stage. It's, you know, it's third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade plays. But what they did this year, which I was really happy about, is they made a little film. They've been working for the last 3 months on a film. And the film was, essentially a story about a teacher who, about a musician who became a teacher just because he wanted to win the talent show. And I don't know, it's loosely based on a play that's loosely based on a movie with Jack Black. Oh, that's all I'll say. And it was a lot of fun to watch because you recognize quickly that the kids had a lot of fun for the last 6 months putting this together. And it was really good. And my son has a song. He has an Ed Sheeran song in the film. And then he has a performance afterwards, which is a Charlie Puth jam. Attention. Real strong song. Real strong. He did a good job. His tie up there. But the takeaway was, in the last 3 months or so, my son has gotten completely enamored and obsessed with the dance flossing. You know what this is?
Yeah.
So this is when the kid did in the Katy Perry movie where he does music video and he does his arms back and forth. Oh my gosh, the kids love this stuff. They love it. They do it all the time. And he's just been trying it over and over, not really understanding it, trying to get it, watching the videos, doing the dance. And
yeah,
he does
it
once in a while. And he goes slow. And I hate it. I hate it. When he starts doing it, I'm like, knock it off.
Yeah,
like if he's just like bored and he's sitting there at a restaurant and he starts to start, I'm like, knock it off.
This is a circle of life. This is, you know,
we were doing
the twist when we were kids. You know, your dad hated that too.
We're doing the cabbage patch. And we're yeah. So anyway, tonight, curtain call, right? Curtain call, and they're playing the music, and he bows, and then everyone starts kind of dancing as they're dancing off, and he hits it.
Oh, he nails it.
And he goes and he does it. No longer is it a half practice, you know, like can't figure it out. You realize now that he has been leading up to this moment in front of an audience to try it, and he does it and he nails it. And he gets a laugh because everyone's like, oh, that's a really good, he's doing that dance now. Parents are like, he's really doing it. And I was just like, you.
That's awesome.
You. Now retire that thing. Put it away. Get a new dance craze. Last year the dab, this year the flossing. So it was a good show. But yeah, so I missed, but it was funny because the play video was probably, film was maybe an hour or so.
Really?
It was a lot shorter. There have been a couple in the past where you're like going on 2 hours where you're like, this is unbelievably long for a fourth grade.
Hour seems like a good amount of time.
An hour was a good amount of time. Yeah. And they did a couple of songs and did the film was 30 minutes or whatever. But yeah, and when it was done, I'm like, oh, great. And I looked down at my phone. It's like seventh inning.
Yeah.
It was like 7:30, 8 o'clock, seventh inning, 0-0 or something. I was like, what is this? You're texting me like, and I felt like the old days of Wonder Lake. I had to get the blue light on. I had to be like, hey, I wish I could stay for all the pleasantries with all the other parents. You got to put the blue light on and get in and WGN Radio. And we've been thinking about this. It's been fun because you and I have talked about this a lot, Pete, that, you know, I'll watch one of my favorite show on TV right now is Whip Around on Fox. Mm-hmm. It's like a fast-paced, Frank Thomas is one of the color commentators, but it's a fast-paced...
like a highlight show of baseball.
Highlight show every night. And after we're done with the show, I DVR it and I get home and I watch it like, boom, that's like, not, puts me to sleep. And I love it because a lot of times when they're done with the game, they give all the stats of the game and they say the total running time of the game. And I'll see a Tampa... Baltimore game, it's 2 hours and 24 minutes. And I'm like, wow, Sox haven't had a 2 hour and 24 minute game. They're usually 3 hours, 15 minutes, 3:30. And it's because their pitching staff, their bullpen blows up. And I'm like, oh, one of these days we're going to get caught in that. One of these days, and it'll be it'll be a summer night.
Yeah.
A summer Friday where they're going to breeze through a 2 hour and 15 minute game on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And they're going to give us 2 hours of talk.
Yep.
And that's what they did tonight.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, it was so fun because it was like, I kind of had a smile on my face because I'm like, Peter, I talked about this. Like, this is the only other. And because we're leaving, the download's over starting next week, and we're moving the Cochran show with Steve, we were like, well, it's never going to happen to us. Like, the dice was, but it happened tonight. Now, what's going to happen next week? Rain delay. We have yet to have a rain delay.
Didn't we have one?
No, we had a rain out.
Oh, we had a rain out.
Early on in the season, they called that game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you know, so you have time to plan for a show. But there is yet to be a prolonged rain delay. The delay where they used to play the 1970 All-Star game.
Yeah, I used to love those.
That's the game. That's where you want to be.
I don't think they do that anymore, though.
I don't understand
why. They put, like, King of Queens on or something.
That's the dumbest thing ever, right?
I want to see, I want to see Tommy Lasorda yelling at somebody.
Yeah. I want to see the 1977 All-Star game with Freddie Lynn.
Yeah,
see those kind of guys. I want to see late 70s baseball players chewing a lot of gum. And talking about and Bill Madlock, you know, and you're just, that's what I want to see, Adam Hogue. Those are the things that I want to see when there's a rain delay. Instead, it feels like they corporatized it. They put reruns of King of Queens or maybe a Maury. Nobody wants to see that.
There was a Cubs rain out a few weeks ago.
And did they?
I don't know if it was a rain out, but it was a delay, and they were showing. They were showing random, like the Sandberg game.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
Showed a Zambrano's no-hitter in Milwaukee.
It was like a special WGN 60-year anniversary of covering the Cubs or whatever whatever.
I agree with you, though.
Yeah.
I almost look forward to rain delays. And you would stick around because they'd have those. And maybe they don't package it that way anymore. Maybe who was the guy who did This Week in Sports?
Mel Allen?
Mel Allen. The Mel Allen This Week in Baseball.
Yeah.
Like, they don't do that anymore, so they don't package it that way. But, man, watching the late 70s All-Star Game packages and maybe, you know, the recap of the Cincinnati Red Monster or something like that.
Yes.
Pete Rose running over a catcher in an All-Star game.
Yes. That's what you want to see. You don't want to see this. You know, you don't want to see, okay, we'll be back in 30 minutes. Here's the Charlie Sheen show. What I forgot the name of it.
Two and a half men.
Two and a half men for you. We'll be right back after Two and a Half Men.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully, but we only have a week because technically the download ends on the 15th. So we have a week more, and hopefully in the next, who do they play?
They're at home all next week. Indians.
That could be the case.
And then I got always.
So keep, then
And then the Tigers at home all next week.
All right, let me check the weather on my phone and see if we got any possible 7-day scenarios here.
That's why this is gonna be the last time I'm inside the Showcase Studio right now, because I signed off like 2 weeks ago, and then they were like, oh, no, you gotta go back in there. But this time I know it is gonna be the last time because they're at home all next week, so I'll be at the ballpark.
Oh, you are. So you do the post at the ballpark
when the games are at home. Yeah.
How often, Adam Hogue in studio, good to see you, buddy, and we're going to talk football coming up here, but how often in the post game do you find yourself having to stretch because they ended at a weird time? They ended at like 10:02, and technically we don't have to come in and do the last 15 minutes. Do you find yourself having to do 40 minutes of White Sox highlights?
So what we've been doing is the 7 o'clock games are usually where that happens, because a lot of times we get done about 10:40. I mean, there's really no reason for you to come in here to do 20 minutes. So,
10 with commercials, but go ahead.
Exactly. So it's like, usually what we'll do is if it's a game where a lot happened and there's more to talk about, or if Kevin Powell's out of the ballpark, we'll talk both Cubs and Sox. We'll fill that extra 20 minutes. Or if there's a big Bears thing, like during the draft, I think I immediately flipped into Bears mode and we did 20 minutes of Bears things like that. So we just kind of treat it like a sports window.
I missed that this year. It was last year during the risky that we got to do the live coverage. We didn't have that this year. But the...
that was a lot of fun.
Maybe you could bring back the 70s highlights. Maybe you could go into the GN archive and find some late 70s and bring that out when you need 20 minutes.
I like it. I don't know if we can find it, but if we can, they got to be in those moving boxes somewhere.
Like, remember when Harry would go to the, and Steve Stone, and I think it was Milo Hamilton, and they would flip the broadcasters in the 5th, 6th, and 7th inning. Those got to be somewhere, right? Those are all old GN broadcasts of the 80s Cubs. They got to have one of those they can throw on. Or the Bill Murray, Harry Carey, when it was the Montreal Expos game. It's on YouTube. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. If you have not, you have to remember as a Chicagoan that Bill Murray used to go into the booth with Harry Carey and call a game. And it was kind of when he was around Ghostbusters time. Like, he would say he was like maybe right off of Saturday Night Live, 80s, like mid 80s.
He also filled in when Harry was
when he had a heart
out. Yeah.
And the game in which he fills in and the stuff he's in there with Harry, it is Andy Kaufman level hysterical. I don't even recognize. I mean, it's so fun. There's this great moment where the old graphics. I was just watching it not too long ago where they throw up the old graphics on a. On a game like they used to when it was, I remember it was Mitch Webster was on the Expos and Tim Wallach and those kind of guys. And it was really funny because he goes, there's their lineup, bunch of bums. That guy's no good. That guy's no good. That guy's no good. It was like he was just having a total blast. And you're like, I'd like to see more of that out of baseball. I feel like they've tightened it up too much.
It's like real life major league with Bob Uecker. Did you see Uecker do an inning with Hawk on Sunday?
That was amazing.
That was cool.
Why? What was the reason for doing that? Just because it
Hawk's request, I believe.
Yeah,
I believe that Hawk. They've kind of allowed Hawk to treat those Sunday home games that he's calling this year as kind of whatever you want to do. You know, it's your send off year, and I think it was his request to have Uecker come in since they're playing the Brewers. And doing it.
I was watching we were out for lunch or something. I was looking up the TV and I saw, Hawk and Uke in there. And then there was a big cowboy hat like on the counter. And I was like, is that Uke's cowboy hat or is that Hawk's cowboy hat? Because they both seem like cowboy hat guys.
There were two. They stacked it on top of each other.
Is that what it was?
I don't know whose hat it was, but Uke immediately put it on his head over his headset when he came in there. And then I don't know that anybody caught this because it was very subtle as they were going to break. But Uecker said, all right, where's the booze? I don't think anyone caught it because he like kind of mumbled it as they were going to break.
That was a good series. I went to the game on Friday night, and I was telling the Download Nation here about how I was standing in the concession. I was sitting in the outfield. I think you were in the same seats. It's the GN seats.
Yeah.
I think you were there on Saturday.
I was there Saturday. Instagram. Yeah.
We were in the same seats on Friday.
Okay.
And we went up to the concession right at the top there. And mm-hmm. then the slowest concession stands guy in all time. I mean, he was charming.
Set a record.
He set a record. Mm-hmm. While we're standing there, I said, this is the longest. Because it was right after the national anthem. And we went up there and the first pitch already happened. Ryan Braun steps in and hits a home run. It hit my seat.
Oh!
And if you remember that home run, the right field was right center. It hit right on the seat.
That was right where that hit. Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, because you're right. I sat there Saturday.
Right, and I was looking straight at the little TV at the concession stand when it happened, and I'm like, oh, you're going to, oh, don't. No, like when there's a drive, deep right center, that looks like a don't. Go deeper. No!
Oh, that's brutal.
So when I got back there, there was a woman who was sitting next to me. I saw her with her hoodie on, and that's what I, when I was looking at the replay, I was like, oh, I got to see where she's at. To see where it actually hit, and she was sitting right behind the seat, which was mine.
Did she have the ball?
No. Oh. She goes, she was still scared.
Oh.
Like, I sat down, I go, what happened here? What, did you not get the ball? She goes, this is my first game. She was like she had done something wrong for not catching the ball, and it like did a little ricochet, and somebody caught it. A brewer.
Of course, it's her first game. That, I mean,
right.
How many games have you been to right. your entire life? Right. You've never had a home run hit to
no,
you.
I don't even know what I would have done. The best part is, and someone called this out, I probably would have broke a finger trying to catch it.
Right. So you saved. Yeah.
So that concession stand guy probably saved my life.
I can speak to that because I have a little cousin who played baseball collegiately, and his team was on a trip to Fort Myers in the spring for their tournament they were in, and they went to one of the Twins' spring training games while they were there, and the game was on TV, and home run ball was hit right to him in the stands, and he dropped it, and we have video of it because it was on TV, and we bring it up to him pretty much every single time we see him.
You made a meme out of it?
Because he's a college baseball player. Yeah, there's no excuses there. You got to catch the ball.
Glove? He didn't have a glove.
No. That's the only thing.
Yeah, that's what he's going to say.
Still. Catch the ball.
The other thing that happened in that game, which was amazing, and I kind of referenced it the other night as well. So, Lorenzo Cain is in center field. He's for the Brewers, center fielder. And I've tried for years to try and get the player's attention. I think it's my dad's fault. Whenever we'd go to the game, we'd be in the outfield. He'd try to get... I remember Ricky Henderson was out in left field. He's like, Ricky Henderson, hey, Ricky, you're a bum! Try to get him to turn around, right? He doesn't turn around. So I got that in me as well. So I'm like, you know, I'm with my son. I hit him on the thing. I watch this. Hey, Lorenzo, you're a bum! You know, so I mean, everyone's like kind of laughing around. Yeah. He doesn't turn around. You're like, ah, I tried. You know, try to be loud. There are three women sitting behind me. And they're like, hey, Lorenzo. They're like that. He turned around. He gave him a wink. He then started to turn around after every pitch.
Oh.
He had and he would get their eye contact. He'd flash a smile. They were in the middle of that game, sixth or seventh inning. They started doing pitching changes every batter. And so he'd be on one knee out there. And at one point, he blew a kiss to the girls. Like, it was a whole thing. I've never seen interaction from a ball player like that. Even when you're at the dugout level, you might get a, hey, what's going on kind of thing. But you've never seen someone, every ball, the guy would find a reason to look back in the stands.
Huh.
Yeah. He did not care about that game.
I did, Saturday, because again, I was sitting in the same exact seats, I did notice that he was looking back a lot. So maybe he was still looking for those women.
They come back. But the way they said it was so funny. They go, Lorenzo! And that just got his attention.
See, you should have been using that voice the rest of the game.
Oh, don't think I didn't. Yeah. Don't think I kept trying to mimic it and see if he'd turn around. But yeah,
that's great.
That was fun to go out to the ballpark. I can't wait to do that all summer long. It's going to be fun. Adam Hoge here. Here's what we're going to do. Coming up after the 9:30 news, let's talk Bears. The Bears minicamp this week, and we got a little bit more information about who the team was. We also got George McCaskey weighing in a little bit on the NFL national anthem policy. It was a big week for the Bears. It's always a little bit overshadowed by, you know, baseball and other sports, the NBA finals and the Stanley Cup, but a big week up at Halas Hall for a lot of guys that we had not seen before.
Yeah, and I actually have a lot of thoughts on the what's happened the last few weeks with the national anthem policy. Sam Macho has kind of been the player spokesperson for the Bears, and he said some amazing things. And I thought it was good that George got up there and talked yesterday, even if maybe not everything he said was perfect, but he did, I thought, do an overall decent job. So I have plenty of thoughts on that, too.
I always thought that the Bears last year during the anthem controversy, they didn't seem to get in line with a lot of the NFL, one way or the other. They stood, they locked arms at one point when that was happening, but there wasn't a lot of talk about it in the locker room or obviously protest on the field.
Well, you know, for all the heat that the McCaskey family gets in this town, the one thing I've noticed in the 8 years I've covered this team is that the players really, by and large, respect the heck out of the family. And it's pretty clear where George stands on this. He thinks that the players should be standing for the national anthem. And so I don't really necessarily know if it was coming from John Fox or George McCaskey or where it was coming from last year when this all happened, specifically week three against the Steelers, because that was the week where Trump said the things he did about, he went right after the players, and the league as a whole, even Jerry Jones, who's way over on that side, was standing, locking arms with his own players, kneeling. That was the week where the Bears players all stood, but they locked arms together in a show of unity. So even there, like, that was a great way to handle it, because it's showing unity as a team. And so that's kind of where, that's kind of, I don't know. There's a lot of ways to look at it.
No, I agree with you. It was a great way for the league to handle it because they made it about something that wasn't being discussed.
Well, it's really about unity, but I get it.
Well, and that's where I would go with what's happened the last couple of weeks. They've done the opposite of that. Yeah. I think Roger Goodell has completely fumbled this entire situation the last couple of weeks, and we can get into that.
All right, let's do it. Adam Hogue is with me tonight. We're going to talk Bears minicamp and football, of course, here on 720 WGN. The download continues. Stay with us. Thanks, Pam. It's Download 720 WGN. Adam Hogue is in studio with us. Of course, covers the Chicago Bears for WGN Radio. You can find his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears, as well as being the postgame voice for the Chicago White Sox. And we want to talk about the Bears this week because one of my favorite segments on the Download has been the Monday evening quarterback, which I always love to sit for an hour with you.
I'm going to miss that, man.
Yeah, that's
we had a lot of fun this year.
We had a ton of fun to talk for a long time about what happened in the previous day's Bears game or previous nights, mostly day game. We'll see. Sunday noon games when you talk about the Bears. A lot of change with this team. I mean, obviously, John Fox is out. Matt Nagy is in. A young coach that we talked about, whose first opportunity to come to be at the head coach ranks. A very interesting guy, very respected around the league. This is really his first mini camp. I mean, they had rookie camps and other, voluntary offseason stuff. But this was the first time you start to see his team come together. What did you notice about this guy, about this new coach in Chicago?
Well, the most obvious change is the offense itself. Charles Leno, the Bears' left tackle, talked to us the other day, and he was asked, look, anytime there's a coaching change, there's always like this positive buzz, right? There's a honeymoon period.
Right.
The same thing happened with John Fox until they played a game. It was, okay, John Fox is coming in. It's the guy who's respected. He's going to fix everything that Trestman screwed up. And so the question to Charles Leno was, does it feel the same or is it different? Because Leno was here when that happened too, and he said, well, we all know John Fox was a defensive guy. We got a guy here now that can put up points. And it was just the truth. But it tells you that this is, John Fox was not an offensive guy. The offense the Bears run last year was quite frankly an insult to NFL offense.
Oh, it was terrible.
It was so hard to watch.
There was the one game that they won. They beat the Ravens where Mitch Trubisky threw 14 passes? 16 passes?
You're probably thinking of the Panthers game.
Whichever, but three of them. They're three of them right in a row.
It was so hard to watch.
40 carries for Jordan Howard for 87 yards and 14 passes for Mitch Trubisky, and ugh.
And so that's part of the reason why the offensive change is even more apparent. Because, for one, you have a lot more speed out there with guys like Taylor Gabriel. We haven't even really seen Allen Robinson yet in team drills. He's on pace to be ready for training camp, which will be great. But Anthony Miller, who they drafted in the second round, already is looking like a guy to me who could contribute very early on, as long as he has a good understanding of the offense. And then Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard still out there, and Trey Burton is in such an important position inside Matt Nagy's scheme. These are all things we can go into depth about once we get to the season, once the fans can actually see it with their own eyes in the games. But I'm really fascinated to see how the preseason games, what they actually put on tape, because we're allowed to watch these closed practices right now. We're not allowed to report strategy or anything like that, or really the details of what we're seeing. All I can really say is it looks completely different. Mm-hmm. It's like a college. It's like Northwestern's offense on steroids. Okay, they're spread out.
Yeah, right.
But everybody's so much faster because it's the NFL, and then you have Mitch Trubisky in there who can run the ball and do all these crazy. It's going to be awesome.
Now, you know, we were treated to the offensive mind of Mark Trestman, who was going to bring us advanced football to Chicago a couple years back, and it was going to be a treat to see Jay Cutler in this kind of offense. We did this. The offense was it was a good offense, but at the same time, it was maddening to watch Jay Cutler make the same mistakes he made in every offense he's ever been in. With Mitch Trubisky, do you see him being able to adapt to this kind of thing? Is this tailor made for a kid like this who last year was treated with kid gloves?
It's a perfect fit for him because he's a guy who can command this type of offense. You know, he has the brains. Jay Cutler did too. Jay Cutler was really smart, but his problem was he could know an offense, he could spit it all out, he could command a huddle, he could do all those things. He had two issues. One, his teammates out there didn't always respect everything he was saying, and then two, in the moment when he had to process everything and make a decision, make the right decision.
But that's the issue I have with what we haven't seen yet from Mitchell Trubisky.
That's the big unknown. Right. That is why. And I was thinking about this last night. This year for Mitch Trubisky, we're going to learn a lot about him very quickly. And I have 100% confidence that he can understand this offense and spit it out and get everybody lined up and make it run smoothly. I think people underestimate how much of that he was going through last year. And now it's like times 10 because the offense is so much more complicated. But this thing is designed for the quarterback to go to the line and understand where those mismatches are. And the pieces are out there.
And go there, right.
And then make the decisions at a lot of RPOs, which is a term Bears fans should hear and understand, and even non-Bears fans who are listening right now. RPO means run-pass option.
Right.
And it means the quarterback can go to the line of scrimmage and change it from a run to a pass. Or they got these things built in now where you can snap the ball and then make the decision even after that. And everybody on the field, the running backs need to be prepared to get the ball handed off to them, and the receivers need to be prepared to catch the ball because the quarterback's able to make that decision in a split second. And the difference between Tom Brady and Jay Cutler, obviously, is Tom Brady can handle all that and make the right decision. Does Mitch Trubisky fall on that scale? I don't know.
Well, what we love about Tom Brady, and he watches this level of proficiency that he has, and it almost never is the kind of thing where he has to scramble around and find and use his athletic ability to extend a play and find a guy. I mean, it happens, but to win a game. And with Mitchell Trubisky, what I find interesting is this offense with Matt Nagy the kind of thing where he lines up to the line and he's trained and taught that's the play. Go to Taylor Gabriel. It's a mismatch. Hike, throw.
Yeah.
Is that the idea, this idea that they're not asking for him to go run around and Jim McMahon it to whoever's going deep and find him, whoever doesn't have the safety over them? That the design of this offense and why it's so intricate and cerebral is that they can decide where the ball goes before they snap the ball.
Exactly. Remember when Dow Loggins said that crazy thing last year where the defense dictates what the offense is doing?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was like,
"Yeah, we
that's not how it's supposed to work." Shouldn't you know that? You're an NFL offensive coordinator.
Have fun in Miami.
This is the opposite. This is the offense dictating to the defense, hey, this is how you need to line up against this.
Who runs that kind of offense in the NFL? Like, who can we, if you're an NFL fan and you watch the Chiefs?
Well, yeah, the best two examples are to look at what the Chiefs did last year because Matt Nagy was the coordinator. But really, any team that comes from Andy Reid's.
So the Eagles.
Yeah, so that's the other big comp here. What we've really been concentrating on, the teams that I've went back and watched, are the Chiefs, most obvious because Nagy was running that offense last year. But also the Eagles because Matt Nagy replaced Doug Peterson in Kansas City when Peterson got the job in Philadelphia. So that gives you an example of a guy leaving Andy Reid's system and what he implemented at a new place.
We watched the Eagles in the playoffs put up, 40-plus points a couple times. I mean, they were a team
with Nick Foles.
Yeah, right.
And again, that idea is, so you lose Carson Wentz, which everybody's comparing Trubisky to for a number of reasons. They're very similar. Very similar smarts and same offense. But the reason why Nick Foles was able to come in, obviously he's not as good, but the offense is, it's a system, and it's okay to be somewhat of a system quarterback.
Right.
The best offenses, Tom Brady's a system quarterback. He's the greatest quarterback of all time, but he's also benefiting from the system. Every quarterback does. When you're in a good system, when you have that marriage between the quarterback and the coach, and it all works, that's what you want. So the idea is that, like Nick Foles came in and the offense worked because you had the mismatches, and he's smart enough to identify that and make the right decision enough times.
That's what he was asking.
Did he have the crazy arm that Carson Wentz does? Was he really in total control the entire time? Probably not, but it was good enough to get the job done because they had a really good team, and they also had a really good defense, by the way.
The Kansas City Chiefs are Adam Hogue's in the studio. The Kansas City Chiefs, when I watch, I remember the one game, I watched two games all year, because, and I've watched the highlights of all of it, but I watched two. The first game, they were on Sunday Night Football, and they de-pantsed the Patriots.
Yeah.
They destroyed them, and it was the birth of their rookie running back, who had a huge year.
Kareem Hunt.
Yeah. He was outstanding. They were using him out of, he was very Tariq Cohen in the way that they were using him in the backfield, but he's all swinging him out. Just a ton of speedsters putting up, I think, 40 points plus on the Patriots.
And then Tyreek Hill running wide open down the middle of the field.
I mean, it was really impressive, and it looked as if there was a changing of the guard, and the Kansas City Chiefs were going to be a team that could figure out the old Patriots.
Yeah.
Flash forward to the other game that I watched, which was a playoff game in which the Kansas City Chiefs were playing the Tennessee Titans, I believe at home in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And Kansas City went up and did the same thing they did in the first half of the game against New England, just smoked the Titans. It was 21-0, 24-0. They ended up losing that game in such a horrific fashion that they should have broken up the team. I mean, it was ridiculous the way they lost to the Titans. What should we take away from that? That did the league catch up to Nagy and the way that they were doing things there? What was the difference between week one and that playoff collapse that we saw in Kansas City?
Well, first off, the Chiefs played mostly like they did in week one the rest of the year. That offense really was like that. That was a weird second half. And Matt Nagy, to his credit, took the blame for it. And you may remember the Bears decided to... Ryan Pace interviewed him literally the next morning after that game.
Yeah, right. And he said to Ryan Pace, right? Didn't he say something like that?
Well, Pace called him and said, "Hey, do you want to push this back a little bit? We respect the fact that you had,
that you just laid an egg,
an awful loss last night. Do you want some time?" And Nagy said, "No, let's move it up." And they moved it up.
Interesting.
So, and obviously, that's one of your first questions you have, which you just asked me. What the heck happened
last night, dude?
And it probably wasn't asked exactly like that, but Nagy owned it. And I don't necessarily think he needs to own the whole thing. There certainly was some questionable play calling. The defense also blew the lead.
Yeah.
The offense didn't help, and the offense didn't really score the rest of the game. So, you know what? I'll be honest. That's a fair question. The one weakness, I don't even know if it's a weakness, but it's a big unknown. Nagy only called plays for five games. He wasn't the play caller the whole year. He took those duties over from Andy Reid late in the season. Now, it was mostly with good results, but in the biggest game of the year, in the playoffs...
Reid took it back.
He was still in control.
Nagy was still in
control. But he didn't call a great second half.
And there was a lot of concern in that game, I'm trying to remember, because they should have run out the clock, or they should have time management, and instead they were still kind of on third and six, they were throwing pass. They just were three and out punting the ball. Regardless, it doesn't. What I find interesting about it, though, is that not unlike Trestman, when Trestman came in, the idea was that Mark Trestman was going to bring a philosophical approach, an offensive philosophical approach, and that would work because we had a staunch defense. Maybe it wasn't Lovie Smith anymore, but we still had Lance Briggs, Charles Tillman, Julius Peppers, these guys who were Pro Bowlers a year before that came this close. You know, they were 10-6. They should have been in the playoffs. It was a tremendous year, and it was that defense set records the year before. I think it was the last year of Urlacher. Mm-hmm. But the point being that, you know, the defense would be fine. But it wasn't. What happened was Trestman was putting up 30 points and giving up 35. And I just wonder from you, Adam, as someone who follows the NFL, when you have a prolific offense that can score like Matt Nagy's offense can, why is it, and much just might be the flow of the game, that it also means that usually those teams give up a lot of points as well?
Well, it, more in general, which is where your question's going, I think is that a lot of times those offensive head coaches don't pay enough attention to the defense, or they don't have the right connections to hire the right defensive coordinator. I would say that that applied in the Mark Trestman spot. Yeah, he'd never been a head coach.
Mel Tucker was the
and Mel Tucker was not qualified enough. He's been coaching in college, actually doing a good job in college ever since, but he was not qualified. They were running an outdated cover two that was already
a vanilla cover. I don't want to get back, but yeah,
right. I mean, hey, Tim Jennings called it a vanilla defense on my show back on the game that year in 2014. Their own players were calling it vanilla. A couple things happened there, but that's in general to answer your question. There's two things that happened with Trestman. One was he didn't have the right defensive coordinator. Two, those players, the window was closing on that defense. Urlacher got hurt. Everything spiraled out of control from there. And, you know, Charles Tillman.
They all got hurt that year. They were
reaching the end of their career, so the talent got bad very quickly. And they didn't have the right defensive coordinator. So that's one big difference. The Bears' defense, to me, is still on the upswing. Younger guys, I still think they're rising. And they managed to keep Vic Fangio, which was the most, I mean, you could argue is even more important than hiring Matt Nagy. Or at least once they made that hire, the most important move of the offseason was keeping Vic Fangio and keeping what they have in place. There's no reason to think that this defense is all of a sudden going to start collapsing because they have a good offense.
Right.
I don't think that will happen here this year.
It's an intriguing concept because the teams in NFL history that have had prolific offenses, the kind that put up the run and gun, run and shoot teams, have also had mediocre defenses. I even think of like the old Houston Oilers. Remember the Houston Oilers had the Warren Moon and an offense, and they had Buddy Ryan on the other side of the ball with Wilbur Marshall, but they're still collapsing to the Buffalo Bills and giving up 41 points in a playoff game. You know what I mean?
Like
they're I don't know if it's a type of football because maybe they're not playing for field position, maybe they're not doing the kind of Lovie Smith corner them kind of football positional thing because they're going for touchdowns that they're giving up more points.
One problem is that when you're playing that type of football, you could have three straight incompletions and your drive just took 30 seconds.
Yeah, right.
And your defense has to come back on the field. Typically with those teams, they're not time of possession teams. And teams that don't have a high time of possession, that means your defense is on the field for a lot of the time. Even when you score, you may score so fast that it puts your defense...
That's where you get college. That's Northwestern's problem.
It happens a lot. There's no question. The defense is on the field too much. And then on the flip side, you have other teams that know how to grind it out. And I don't necessarily know that there's any better way to do it. Part of another big difference is we talk about Trestman being this offensive guru, bringing in this system. One of the biggest differences between that and what Nagy's doing, Trestman was technically a dinosaur in the NFL at that point. He was still running an older system. Yes, it was West Coast, and that was still a pretty pro-style offense. Not that this isn't a pro-style offense, but it definitely has more spread concepts.
It's
definitely
more progressive. Yeah.
Definitely spreading out, and that's why they brought Mark Helfrich in, who was coaching Oregon. I mean, who would have thought?
Well,
I guess Chip Kelly did
well,
get hired.
I mean,
from
but I love it because we're going to talk about the defense coming up after the 10 o'clock. But do they have the right personnel to run a Helfrich kind of offense? Do they have, I mean, obviously it's awesome that Kyle Long went to Oregon, so he understands how that kind of plays out and how to play that kind of system. But, you know, a lot of other players in there, and I think of the running back Jordan Howard, I think of the wide receiver Kevin White, who we have yet to see anything out of. Some of the offensive linemen that are not named Kyle Long, are they the right personnel? Do we have the right personnel for this kind of offense?
You know, I'm going to punt on the offensive line right now because I haven't seen enough of the offense to know, and I tried to ask Leno this the other day, and he really wasn't comprehending it. I think we're all wondering, how does this kind of offense change what the offensive line is doing? And from that standpoint, I don't think it's going to change too much. I don't think you're going to see them lining up with wide gaps in between like Oregon actually does a lot of times. And the more these spread concepts are going to be just the fact they'll have four or five wide receivers out on the field, all spread out across the field sometimes. I think they do have the personnel because your questions about Jordan Howard and Kevin White are fair. And I actually have a lot of questions about Kevin White.
He may not even make the team.
I think he makes a team because he's still making a ton of money and it's all guaranteed. So you're hoping...
Why not? Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, you're hoping to get something out of him. But I don't... Theoretically, he should be a fit because he can catch and run. But I don't know if he'll ever be that go up and get it guy. I guess he doesn't need to be anymore because Allen Robinson can be that guy.
Yeah.
But Taylor Gabriel, Tariq Cohen is an unbelievable fit in this offense. And you could just tell when Matt Nagy is asked about that, he just gets so excited.
And I guess if you think about it, Adam, and at the beginning of the year, you're at the end of last year, you're like, wide receiver has to be a priority. If you think about who's catching the ball in this offense,
sure,
you go Allen Robinson, who's a number one Pro Bowl wide receiver and picked up from the Jacksonville Jaguars. You've got a number two who would be Taylor Gabriel. Let's just say for now, Gabriel in the slot, right?
I think right now Kevin White's technically number two, but I don't know that that's going to stick.
So Kevin White, Taylor Gabriel, then you also have Miller,
rookie, second round pick,
who they moved up for, and then the fifth wide receiver, if you really want to look at it, is Tariq Cohen, and the way that he's going to swing, catch a lot of passes. There isn't room to think that the Bears could bring anybody else in or try anything else. They have a pretty good, solid five guys right there that can catch the ball and make a difference.
It's a great point, and I will admit maybe I overreacted to them letting Cam Meredith walk out the door, because once I saw the offense on the field and saw what they were doing and who was really there, it made more sense to me. I like Cam Meredith. I think he's going to be good in New Orleans, but maybe for that money he was getting, you didn't need to match the contract. Yeah. So I get it, because you're right. Those are options. And in Tariq Cohen's case, Tariq Cohen was already a good player last year. Everybody's excited about him. They couldn't figure out how to use him.
Right.
They didn't have him on the field enough. It was driving me crazy, every Monday night. Look at the snap counts. What the heck are they doing? Why is your most dynamic player the one guy that Dow Loggins admitted was the only person who commanded double teams in the 3 years he was here? 3 years? There was one guy who commanded double teams, Tariq Cohen, and his response was to take him off the field. You need guys to command double teams. It opens up somebody else.
John Fox doesn't play rookies, man.
Oh, my God. So, again, Tariq Cohen's going to be on the field a lot, and Matt Nagy's going to find a way to get him the ball.
All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. We'll get the news. We'll come back. Let's talk defense side of the ball. I have a ton of questions. Chris Conte, is he coming back? He's not coming back. That's good. 312-981-7200 if you got a question for Adam Hogue, who covers the Bears for WGN Radio as well as doing the postgame for the Sox here on 720. Stay with us. Thanks, Bam. It's Download 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here with Adam Hogue, covering Chicago Bears, Chicago White Sox, all the Chicago teams. We're watching the NBA Finals. It's going into the fourth quarter, and the Golden State Warriors are up 24 points. Oh, boy. To sweep that series. That's kind of a loss for the NBA. The NBA hoping to get six games out of that series. It was four, and it's over.
They're just too good.
Yeah.
The Warriors are just too... You and I just did like a bowl show during the news there.
We figured out a way under the cap. We figured out a way under the cap to get LeBron, Russell Westbrook, and throw in whoever else to the Bulls for next year.
Done.
We were able to figure it out with the cap.
Just
math. I got the math. I'll put it on Instagram.
I don't even know all the cap rules. It's so confusing in the NBA, but we still figured it out.
It really revolves around bringing Tony Kukoc back. He's got an opt-in. It's a whole thing.
I'm down with it. Bring number seven back. Love him.
This is the 20th anniversary of the Chicago Bulls final championship against the Utah Jazz. June 14th, 1998 was the shot that Jordan took in Utah to win the game six.
I was in Disney World.
Isn't that amazing to think where you were?
Yeah, I still remember it very well.
I watched the game at the Billy Goat right here underneath the tower, and we took the train back because it got crazy. And the train stopped. The red line stopped in the middle, and it was just sweaty, and it was hot. And there were people on the train that were obviously drunk and celebratory, but you're just sitting there like, this is not going to turn out well. It all turned out well, but you've had that feeling it wasn't going to turn out.
Yeah, that's...
climbing out of the Clark and Division, you know, stairwell in the dark with the rats on the day that the Bulls won the championship.
That is one of, like, the Chicago nightmares that you could have, is being stuck in the subway. Were the lights on, at least?
Lights were on.
Lights were on. Yeah. See, my nightmare is lights off, summer, no AC.
Yeah.
And, you know, you start to, like, feel rats going by your feet or something like that.
All right, Chicago Bears, let's talk defense. The Chicago Bears defense in the offseason, they were able to retain defense coordinator Vic Fangio, which is great. They also lost a couple of players, Pernell McPhee, a couple others, you know, I guess pretty much all their outside linebackers.
Willie Young.
Floyd. Yeah.
Lamar Houston.
Guys that made, at first you look at the position, you say the outside linebacker position is pretty thin. We talked about this the last time we were on it. What are they going to do there? How are they going to rush the passer? But after the minicamp, what's the thought? I mean, are they still in that position? Do they still look at that position as a deficiency?
Yeah, I don't know if they do. I do. I've been comparing it to the wide receiver spot for a while now, last year's wide receiver spot, where this time last year I was going, man, they have Kevin White, who's an unknown, and they have Cam Meredith, who should be good, and then the second Cam Meredith got hurt, you're going, right. They're in trouble. And that's what I feel about right now. What happens if Leonard Floyd goes down?
Right.
Duh.
They drafted two guys on that could rush the passer?
Yeah, well, Kylie Fitz is the is somebody who they think that can help. But we're talking about mid to late round picks. Aaron Lynch is the guy they signed from San Francisco, who I guess one thing I've learned from the offseason is that they have high hopes for, that they believe his career could be resurrected. He has past history with Vic Fangio, but, you know, that was the Marcus Cooper story last year, too, and that didn't really turn out. Also, Aaron Lynch has suffered an ankle injury and a hamstring injury with no pads on.
Yeah.
So I have major question marks about that. Sam Acho, we know what he is. He's a good, solid player who is more than worthy of being out there on the field. But he's not gonna pile up a whole ton of sacks. Look, if they're gonna get after the quarterback this year, they need that defensive line to create a ton of pressure. They need Akeem Hicks in the backfield. They need Eddie Goldman to continue to collapse the pocket in the middle.
Who's playing on the other end?
At outside linebacker?
No, defensive, I guess it'd be defensive.
Oh, I think right now you pencil in Jonathan Bullard.
The kid, second-round pick from a couple years ago.
From Florida, who he, third-round pick, I think. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Second.
It doesn't matter.
Nah.
I thought, got a lot better last year. Was always playing behind Mitch Unrein, and John Fox loved Mitch Unrein, and by the way, Mitch Unrein was very, very good last year, too. He signed in the offseason with Tampa, so he's gone. That opens up a spot for Jonathan Bullard to become a full-time starter. So he's going to have every opportunity to do that, and I'm actually pretty optimistic about that.
The drafting of Roquan Smith, the middle linebacker from Georgia, who was the eighth overall for the Chicago Bears. What does that do for this defense? Because Danny Trevathan was there, and he, for all intents and purposes, was doing a pretty good job running the defense. You saw the drop-off when he was not in the lineup last year. What does Roquan Smith bring to this defense that they didn't have before?
Well, you're right that I thought Danny did a good job calling the plays out there on the field. There is a defensive headset. They get the calls, and it's really no different than the quarterback relaying it to the offense. But he never liked doing it. I talked to him about this. He's willing, more than willing to and was pretty good at it, but he'd much rather be the other inside linebacker just being told where to go, go make the play.
Right.
There's a lot to process there. Yeah. So you need somebody willing, somebody who loves that. And that's what Roquan Smith is. Roquan Smith is probably going to be that guy. I'd be shocked if he's not week one. He's somebody that instinctually should know where everybody's lined up. He's going to be... I mean, I hate throwing Brian Urlacher comparisons out there. That's not what I'm doing. But Bears fans can remember Urlacher middle of the defense, knew where every single player was supposed to be, knew where everyone on offense, where the ball was going. Matt Forte, in his retirement ceremony last month, told this great story where his first practice coming out of Tulane, his first day of training camp, I think, or maybe even mini camp, whatever it was, his first practice, and lined up at the line of scrimmage, and Urlacher calls the play out that they're about to run. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? And sure enough, they hand the ball off to him, and Urlacher's right there to tackle him right away. I mean, so that's the possibility of what Roquan Smith can turn into. You know, probably the ceiling. We're talking about a guy who's going in the Hall of Fame in August here. So, but that's the type of player the Bears think they have. Somebody who can process the whole field, process the offense, know what's coming. And if that's the case, it just makes everybody else better. Danny Trevathan can be that guy who can use his speed and just go make the play, which he's really good at. And that'll help the pass rush too. I just don't know, unless Leonard Floyd develops into this 15-sack guy this year,
where they're getting pressure.
I think they're going to be in trouble.
Adam Hogue with
one
us.
Spot.
He's, of course, covers the Bears. We'll take a quick break. We'll stay on time here. We'll come back, and we'll continue because we haven't talked about the secondary, and I want to get your thoughts on where is the weak point on the defensive side of the ball, even after all of the offseason and the rookies and the free agent acquisitions. Where, if you're an offensive coordinator of the Green Bay Packers, you're like, that's where the ball's going. That's coming up. Stay with us. Download 720 WGN. Adam Hogue is in studio. We're talking Bears tonight on the download.
It's going to be my last 10 minutes in
here. It's your last 10 minutes. How do you feel?
Depressing.
You feel good?
You know, quick story can I tell?
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
It's your 10 minutes.
I grew up in this city. And when I was a kid, my dad and I actually got a haircut in the Equitable Building next door.
That's awesome.
In the basement. They had a barber shop there. And so he would always take me there. And every single time we walk by here, we'd get off the 151 bus right there. And I insisted on checking out the radio.
That's great.
So, I mean, we look through that
knocking
glass.
Knocking on the window.
And then, it was obviously really cool to be on the other side of the glass for as long. I mean, great memories.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, think about how many times you've walked past this building in Chicago and what it means, and to be on the other side of the glass to look out every night. It's tremendous. We've got, I think, about a week left here, but this will be the end for White Sox broadcast coming up this weekend. All right. I'm the Detroit Lions. I'm prepping Thanksgiving. I'm ready to go. It's a short week. How do we attack this Bears defense? What's our game plan? For you to look right now in the middle of the summer, where is the weak point for the Bears defense?
Yeah, I think, I mean, here's the thing. It's been pretty good. Everybody healthy. There's not a ton of weaknesses.
Can you run on this defense?
I mean, if Eddie Goldman, Keem Hicks, Jonathan Bullard, that's a tough task. And while I did just spend 10 minutes or so questioning the pass rush, those guys do a good job against the run. Like, Sam Acho is a good run defender, even though he's not the greatest pass rusher. And then all this, you just added Roquan Smith, who's supposed to be like a plug-and-play week one
fast,
dynamic.
Sideline to sideline, right?
So I think running the ball against this team is going to be hard as long as they stay healthy. I guess the weakness would maybe be the secondary. It's interesting the Bears have not paid Adrian Amos yet. Safety had a really good year last year, but still, he's in the last year of his rookie deal, and they haven't signed him to an extension yet, so obviously they still think he has more to prove. Eddie Jackson, you're hoping, takes a big step forward in year two. Last year, what's interesting is they spent all that money matching the Packers' offer to Kyle Fuller, but a lot of teams kept attacking Kyle Fuller. That's where it seemed like.
Was that because of Kyle Fuller, or was that because they didn't want to deal with Prince and Mukamara on the other side?
Well, it does speak to how well Prince and Mukamara was playing last year, which is why they gave him a ton of money this offseason, too. I thought it was always interesting because some people were throwing out Kyle Fuller, Pro Bowler, Kyle Fuller, and he was certainly much better last year and earned the money that he got. But I kept saying, guys, why would they keep throwing at him if he was that I mean,
right. Pro Bowlers have they don't they you, ball doesn't come their way,
right? So I don't know, but you know, the Packers were one of those teams that kept attacking them. In fact, he had one of his worst games of the season when the Packers came here to Soldier Field. They were still the team that offered him that big contract that the Bears had to match. So there's something there that that team's like. I guess what I'm saying is, it's hard to answer this question, which is a very good thing. It's a very good thing for the Bears' defense that it is hard to single out an area where you can attack. I guess what it would be is you know that they're not going to get after you. There's not necessarily a Von Miller that you have to worry about every single time double teaming.
Right, right.
Unless Leonard Floyd takes a huge step forward here, which is possible.
You know, I want to end by talking about the obviously the political issues around the anthem, and maybe a good segue to that is the Bears, you know, keeping the door open on safety. There are some safeties that are out there still that are free agents, which is completely surprising to me because it seems like those are positions everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
One of those names is Eric Reed, who's a former Pro Bowl San Francisco 49er safety. His claim to fame right now is that he took a knee next to Colin Kaepernick. He became a, I don't even think he was a free agent. He might be a free agent, but he was cut by the 49ers. And nobody in the league wants him. We're going through the whole collusion thing again with this player. But he's 20-something years old, 26, 27. I don't know what he's commanding in salary, but and he played with Vic Fangio. He seems like he would be the kind of guy that could come in and develop a veteran presence on any team anywhere.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is there's more of a... I mean, I guess the Bears can say, look, we have two young safeties we like right now. Eric Reed probably has even more of a case than Colin Kaepernick in terms of being talented enough that he should have a job right now. Right. It's pretty obvious what's happening there. Eric Reed is now with Colin Kaepernick and two guys that are the league has decided not to employ over all this. Whether it's directly in a collusion case that they can prove or just a bunch of teams who are afraid it sort of just happened organically and now these teams are afraid to go there. I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Why are they afraid to go there? I know that the president likes to make political issues, and he seems to be the one that likes to poke the bear. Is there any correlation drawn to players that take knees to the bottom line? Because I don't know. I don't know why you would be afraid to bring in an Eric Reed.
It seems like the league is afraid of that. That it seems like the NFL is legitimately scared that the ratings dip has something to do with all the political divisiveness that's been going on the last two seasons. I find that weird because the league's own head spokesperson was on Twitter last week bragging about how I don't know if I have the exact number, but something like 5 out of the top 10 shows on all of primetime television last year were NFL games.
Yeah.
Ratings are down everywhere. People are cutting cords. That's what I think it is. If you look at where the NFL still is compared to everything else, they're still right there as the most dominant force in television, let alone sports.
I mean, I just wonder about that argument because it seems to be very convenient, the idea that, oh, we don't want to take Eric Reed because we're worried about ratings, only because you'll have much more evidence to people turning off football because of domestic violence situations or just the violence on the field situations where concussions and covering up evidence about the long-term effect of concussions. There seem to be other storylines that you probably could draw a straight line to losing viewers than a player that takes a knee.
Yeah, I don't buy it. So I don't know what the NFL is so afraid of. But they're afraid of something. And they screwed this up the last couple weeks because they hastily passed an anthem policy that came together really quickly. I know this because the night before it got passed, I was texting with a league source that had knowledge of what was going on in these meetings. And I can't use the word that he used, but the what was being said to me was, it's not going well. Like, this is kind of crazy what's happening, and it's not really organized. And then hastily the next morning, all of a sudden, they had a policy that was out there. And then we found out that it was never actually voted on.
Yeah,
and I just think it's unnecessary.
That was the question, and that seems to be the one that seems to keep coming up. as you look at the season last year, the craze over kneeling in front of the flag was
dying
something.
Out.
It was early in the season.
The players
by the time
doing
they got to the playoffs, no one was doing it. It had moved on. The country had moved on. And,
yeah,
and the idea that we see what was happening with the protests, we understand someone's protesting, you can like it or not like it, and you move on. So why bring this back up? Is it because of the president? Was it because of the political issue? Why bring this back into the firestorm that is politics?
All I know is that they felt like something had to be done. I don't know if they thought they were getting ahead of the game, like there was going to be more protesting this year. I talked to the players, though, and most of them were like, I don't know why this is necessary.
We got our point across.
The whole point was to create conversation. We've done that. Now we're trying to look in other avenues. The irony is that there's now actually more incentive to now kneel during the anthem, because the first person who does it now with the anthem policy is going to put a team in conflict over, do they pick up that player's fine? Do they fine? I think it's up to the teams to fine the players now. It's a really weird situation, and all it did was put a spotlight back on the issue. And then here's another thing that needs to be talked about, if I can sneak it in really quickly,
yeah,
that's really not being talked about enough. This idea of Trump versus the NFL, it is a real thing. Trump, for years, has tried to get in the NFL. He wanted to own teams, most recently with the Bills.
Yeah.
And there's a battle there. And him becoming president was the worst thing that could happen for the NFL. And now there's a battle. And I think this whole thing may have just been trying to appease him, and they were gullible enough to think that it was just, he's going to be like, okay. But if you watched his first thing, he said, oh, this is great, but you know, I still don't think that they should be able to stay in the locker room. Like, it wasn't good enough for him.
It never will be.
And it never will be.
But the president, as we kind of talked about this a little bit in the Mincing Rascals about the Eagles in the Super Bowl, the president knows where he's, I like to call him President Google Analytics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's watching what tweets get a lot of hits and what gets a lot of coverage.
Yeah.
And the NFL and kneeling is one of those issues. He brings it up out of nowhere. It was in Alabama in that speech that he called them SOBs, the players,
yep,
and he brought that up. He's going to keep doing that because he knows that that is going to get everyone's attention. So it's surprising the NFL would play that game.
And this is why they screwed this up, because he comes back the following week. He attacks the Eagles. He releases that ridiculous statement the other day that paints the players as unpatriotic and anti-military, and that's not at all what it was ever about. And guess who hasn't said a single word since then?
The NFL.
The commissioner,
yeah,
of the league has, yeah, been silent all week long on this, which is really too bad. And it's just one of many reasons why the league has completely botched this whole situation.
Yeah, and it overshadows what's more interesting, which is just getting the ball over the goal line. Adam Hoge, always a pleasure to have you on, bud, and I'm looking forward to talking on the morning show, and we will miss our Monday evening quarterback.
Yes.
But it's going to be a great year of you covering Chicago Bear football coming up here this fall.
Genuinely been a joy talking football with you all the times we have, and thanks for having me tonight. Chance to say goodbye to this studio as well for me, so thanks.